subcommittee of the subcommittee. Today we're on public hearing possible work session on Senate Bill 5522, the Public Utility Commissioner. And this morning we have Rick Willis, Executive Director of the Public Utility Commission. Do you want to pick up where you left off yesterday, or is the chairman going to take up where he left off yesterday, or what are we doing today?
The chairman's going to take up where we left off. He's just out for a moment.
All right.
Hiding.
No. You were that critical yesterday?
It wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't that bad.
I mean, you ought to see when he gets some passion about things like parks and stuff like that.
Who, me?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I didn't think you were listening.
He meant the other chair.
Okay. The material has been handed out to you as in response to the questions that were raised yesterday on the rate making process and what method is used to determine what is a reasonable rate of return. So you can look at these things and get information, and if there's any more specific questions, you can comment to the chair on this. Welcome, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would like an opportunity to cast an eye upon some of that information, and would like to have an opportunity perhaps to ask questions, maybe even tomorrow, if I may, on some of that, if I could have that opportunity.
I believe we're scheduled for a work session tomorrow on the Public Utility Commission, so I might urge you, in case you do have some immediate concerns, that you might want to visit with the PUC between now and tomorrow morning, because I think we're scheduled for a work session, and we're trying to get back on schedule with some of these subcommittee actions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that, and I'll be sensitive to that issue. I would like to go through some of the information. And will we be work session? Is it scheduled only for work session, but public session? No public session, just work session. Okay, so I've got to ask the questions today then. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Ms. Reese, you want to pick up where you were yesterday?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, where we were yesterday was really with we had stopped in the history of 1994, but raised some questions about really how we go about our job. And I thought that, and it was sort of in the context of an implication, I think, that for some reason there's a failure to develop infrastructure because the commission has not given US West and others enough money to do so. And I would like to address that question based on information which, based on the discussion we had yesterday and some information that I thought I'd bring to you. The first sheet I'd like to call your attention to is this sheet, because I think it might be valuable to go back to the basics of regulation and the basics foundation upon which we make decisions. The first is that these utilities are monopolies, and that's the reason in which they are regulated, the reason for which they are regulated. The second is the basic rate making process. Now, what this sheet gives you is the basic formula. And the basic formula is we establish for the utility a revenue requirement. That revenue requirement is sufficient to cover their expenses, plus rate base times the rate of return. Now, rate base, if you'll drop down to the squares below, it gives a little further explanation. Expenses are the operating expenses of the utility plus depreciation. Operating expenses would include taxes, for example. Then that they get their expenses covered, plus they get a rate of return on their planned investments minus accumulated depreciation. This is often technically called rate base, although sometimes the term rate base will be used to apply everything to rates, but rate base is considered their planned investments and the rate of return, which is established by the commission. This is all done in a rate case that can sometimes be very extensive. Sometimes a lot of the issues can be stipulated, but it's all done based on the record in which all interested parties have opportunity to present their evidence. It's cross-examined like a quasi-judicial court case. The important thing I want to point out here is that this formula is the basis from which other types of regulation, even alternative forms of regulation, evolve. Important thing about this that I think it's important for members to understand is this formula was designed to assure the utility adequate opportunity to get a return on its investment, and that the return on investment is set so that the utility gets a return that's commensurate with enterprises of similar risk, other utilities, other monopolies. We go to the capital market to get that information. These issues of what is the rate of return are often very contested, very controversial issues, but we go to the capital markets to get the information. And it's sufficient to enable the utility to attract capital. So rates are set so that they get their costs covered and so that they get a rate of return. The irony here is that this basic formula is often criticized for being cost-based, cost-plus. And it was designed to make sure that the utility could invest in a place like Oak Ridge or Pendleton and get a rate of return on it, like they did in Portland or Eugene. And if the utility makes investments, it goes into this rate base, and they do get a rate of return on it. And if they aren't earning enough, or if they're earning too much for a monopoly, then we adjust rates to reflect what we think are just and reasonable, but the utility gets the return.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So what we're saying is that what goes into this rate of return formula is not just the concentrations of the high commercial or industrial, high residential areas, but also you would come out to Pendleton or to Oak Ridge and you would look at what it costs to do business there, and then you would allow the rate in that particular area to go up to be commensurate with the utility's costs to serve that area. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I'm not sure that I would characterize it that way. Currently, rates are averaged. So the rates that you pay in Pendleton are the same rates that person pays in Portland for the same service by the same utility, except with some changes in competition in which you may have a competitive zone by virtue of us allowing a competitor in for local exchange service. The utility then has the ability to change its price to respond to competition. But the rate that we set is currently averaged. Now, with changes in the Telecommunications Act and depending on some FCC decisions, we may end up in a situation where we de-average rates, and the rates that you pay in one area may be different than what you pay in another. At least that's what the rate that we set. That's not the case right now. And currently, if you make an investment in Pendleton, it goes in to this rate base. You get a rate of return on it. That adds to the revenue requirement. If you will look at the next two steps in the rate case, 2 and 3, then we determine overall and this is unfortunately this sheet is more focused on electricity because it talks about residential, commercial, and industrial customers. But we go through a process of rate spread and rate design where we determine what the rates are for a particular service. But currently, if you are in Pendleton and you're getting the same service that someone is getting in Portland and you're served by US West, you will pay the same rate unless US West has the, unless that one service is competitive and US West has lowered the rate in response to competition. But the rate we set is the same right now.
Mr. Chair,
can I
just follow up? This is pretty important to me because of the spread between number one, and Mr. Ezias has been very specific as to cost basis and relationship, and then has mentioned the rural issues, and those are both very important. I'll prepare you an example in a few moments with indulgence of the chair. I'll just graph it out on the back of the sheet, but I want to make sure that we're understanding basically what happens as a company comes into Pendleton and starts to add service to some of the rural customers in Pendleton. Then because they have a fairly broad base of customers in Portland, then what's going to happen is that there really isn't a lot of incentive for them to spend the additional money in Pendleton. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, no, I think it's the other way around. This is designed so that they will not be harmed by investing in Pendleton because they get a rate of return on that investment the same as they do in Portland, and that the rates are then averaged out. So that actually what happens in that case may be that the people of Portland actually be spending more than it may.
Let me interrupt your question there. As I understand what he's saying, Commissioner Ezias, if that utility is investing into Pendleton, then why would we need a bill such as 142 that says to U.S. West, you're not investing?
That would be a fair question. How can you encourage?
Like, how can you say on one hand we're encouraging investment, on the other hand we're having a bill in that says you're not investing the infrastructure in the community in the rural part of the state?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think the difference here is the perception of the reason for Senate Bill 142. I believe the reason for Senate Bill 142 is it allowed the U.S. West to be deregulated, and the rural infrastructure is a convenient method to do that. If you look at the record of U.S. West, if you look at the rate-setting formula, there is no reason why a utility should not invest in a rural area sufficient to keep up the basis, as we said before, for adequate and reliable service. That's the whole purpose of this, is that the utility has the ability to do that, and it gets a rate of return on that investment as it does in Portland. What 142 does, it allows U.S. West to buy its way out of regulation. There is only one company that I know of that supports 142, and that's U.S. West. And it doesn't contain sufficient protections, as far as I'm concerned, to assure that U.S. West isn't getting deregulated by making investments that it should have or would otherwise have made. And I will use the example of Pendleton Pendleton and Baker City Commission. I already used an example yesterday of the instance in which they got accelerated depreciation and did not replace the switches in Medford, Springfield, and Grants Pass, and Roseburg, and a whole number of places. In the instance of Pendleton Baker City, in 1998, U.S. West had planned on building a $2 million upgrade to its Pendleton Baker City connection. Now, that not only improves service in Pendleton and Baker City and increases the capacity between those companies, it also helps the Grand area because the Grand is capacity constrained because the GTE service ends up going out of LeGrand through the Pendleton Baker City line. It was a $2 million project. It was in their construction budget. They did not complete it, and it is not included in their 1999 budget, despite the fact that in 1998, their revenues and their profits went up over 1997, and despite the fact that they actually spent less in 1998 than they did in 1997, hence their ratio of investment to profit actually went down. Concern we've had with 142 is that the utility would end up making an investment like Hamilton to Baker City, which isn't really advanced services, but without which you cannot do advanced services, and would end up being deregulated because they could use that money to buy their way out of regulation when it's money that they should have spent and would have spent anyway to maintain adequate and reliable service we expect in the network. The criticism that this formula often gets is that it has allowed gold plating. The irony is that this formula says that when you make an investment, you get a rate of return on it, and most economists have criticized this formula because it encourages too much investment. And I think, and that, Senator, is why we actually opened up our investigation of U.S. West construction budgets, is because projects that were planned were not done, and because they have service quality problems, this formula, the point of this formula is that were they to address those capacity problems, they would get an adequate rate of return on it. You asked, you had questions yesterday about whether or not the utilities were actually earning enough, and the other two charts I gave you for GTE and U.S. West show their actual, based on utility reported data, so this is their own data, their Oregon return on equity in the bar graph, the black line is the authorized return on equity based upon rate case decisions that we have made over the course of time. And I think, as you can see, by and large, the utilities have been earning over the authorized rate of return on equity. I need to point out, in the interest of accuracy and clear understanding, on the U.S. West chart, that the 1998 return on equity, which is over 22%, which is pretty good for a monopoly, with a rate of return of about 10%, is based upon no adjustments should the current rate case be decided in our favor. In other words, if we lost completely the rate case, U.S. West would be earning over 22% in 1998. If we won completely the rate case, U.S. West would be earning about the rate of return in about the authorized rate of return in 1998, and in 1997 it would have been less. But in our rate case, we made that assumption that in the early years the rate of return that they made would be less, and in later years it would be higher. I think, you know, what I wanted to show here is that our decisions have not kept money from being available or from being reinvested into the network.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, I just briefly rushed out a concept here, but I just wanted to refer to I noticed that that you've got a source prepared by the Oregon PUC from GTE Northwest Quarterly, an annual report to Oregon PUC on the GTE that shows that they're at about 19% estimated for 1998. And taking a look, and I happen to be a fiduciary on a trust account where I have considerable amounts of utilities, and the only one that I lost money on last year was US West. So I got some information about US West, and I'm looking at the information coming from the FCC. Now, do they report, do we have, who's cooking their books? US West, when they report to the FCC, or this information that shows that they're making over 20% here? Because they reported to the FCC 9.76%.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, the reports to the Oregon Public Utility Commission are U.S. West NGPE's own data, and it is for Oregon intrastate regulated operations. The report to the FCC, I believe, is not exactly comparable. The FCC report, I believe, includes interstate operations and some other factors. I can get one of our auditors or one of our staff people to prepare something that explains the difference from the reports, but the reports are not directly comparable. Our data is based on U.S. West data on Oregon.
So they're doing a poor job in other states earning money is what you basically say at that point.
I don't know how well they're doing in other states. This data indicates if we lost the court case without any changes based on the court case, Oregon intrastate profits would be 22% return on equity.
What is equity? Can you define equity for me based upon, as an accountant, I'm more familiar with ROI information, return on investment. Can you help me with return on equity? That may be where I'm in trouble.
My staff, Bill Warren from our staff, was just pointing out that might be the difference. I believe that's the difference here in the data, representative. What we have done here is return on equity, which is kind of what we look at to determine whether or not the company is over or under earning. The return on investment includes debt capital as well as equity capital. And that's probably where the difference on reporting is. We can get you information on overall rate of return on investment. We felt that for the purposes of for what we do in terms of whether or not a company is over-earning and for whether or not the company has money to reinvest, since the reinvestment comes out of is really a decision on how much of the profits in part to reinvest, that return on equity was probably the better indicator of whether or not the company had enough money to reinvest. I can get you information, comparable information on return on investment, but my guess is that the reason for the difference is that it's return on investment, and it's not just Oregon
amongst all of us. Yeah. Wherever
well, it's
the
probably,
company serves.
Excuse me, Representative. It's probably also includes. It includes all the states, but it also includes interstate revenues as well, to the extent there are any.
Let me just take just a moment. I don't want to bore anybody with this, but I just did a company A and a B and a C, and I said, okay, the original investment, and this is probably, well, I'll look at the equity here. Original investment was 100x, and B came into the market a little bit later, and they did 200x, but C is a brand new company, and they put in 1,000x. And the fair market value, and that would be your equity, I assume that would be one of the factors in equity. Equity doesn't take into consideration the value of the equipment or the value of the company or the...
Right.
Can I get back to that? Let's just take the fair market value. And let's say that that's 1,000x, and that here, this company is a smaller company, and the fair market value, and they're a little bit older. This is a very old company. And that perhaps number C is the new guy on the block, and he's put in 1,000x, and it's worth 1,000x. And let's say that the customer base is 100. These are, let's call them lines. And I guess we could use that. We've got some electrical information in front of us as well. We've got 100 lines in each of these. And let's finally assume that this company serves throughout the state. This is statewide. And that this company got into business at the first of the sale business and at the first opportunity that they had to develop. And this is mostly metro. And that this is strictly a cell company, and it's all metro. Everything is cellular based or whatever it's called. I don't even know the terms of the industry. But based upon the original investment that we were talking about here and the rate of return arrangement, based upon the original investment, this company would be able to charge a dollar statewide, including into rural Oregon, and this company would be able to charge $2, again, based upon the original investment. And this company here, the new guy on the block, would be able to charge $10 based upon the original investment. Let me just bring in the expense portion of this. In the expense portion, I just wrote down some items that I would think, as an accountant, that might be part of the expense portion, because that's the expense plus the rate base times the return of rate of return factor that you put in there. And, here under the expense, I would have this would be obviously older equipment, so I've got R&M. I've got more of that. I'm going to have tenured employees. The return is going to have to go to my shareholders, and that's what we're concerned about here in part. But then I'm also going to have some unions, some probably fairly good-sized union contracts that are going to be involved. Over this end, this is new equipment. So I've got, for the folks that are getting $10 off of each of their lines, I don't have any expense factor or the repairs and maintenance is minimal. It's state of the art. It's a startup company, so I don't have people biting my heels as much as far as investors are concerned. And finally, I probably got a entrepreneur that's involved somewhere in this whole deal, and so I don't have the high most of my senior employees probably have the entrepreneurial spirit. So my expenses over here are going to be very small, and my expenses over here are going to be fairly large. Is that what evens these two rates back out from agency?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Butler, I'm not sure where you get the assumption that the two would be evened out. In the instance you have here, I'm assuming that A is basically the monopoly local exchange company, which is,
let's call it that. Mm-hmm.
which we would regulate because it is one, a monopoly, and it's providing, basic essential services. And we would regulate the rate according to this formula, a basic formula. I'm not strictly, I want to point out here, this is sort of the basis that when we set rates, there are all kinds of variations, and then actually we apply the basic formula, but there's all kinds of variations, and we will adopt mechanisms from time to time that provide various kinds of incentives to the company or adjust to different situations. But we would regulate Company A in a manner that would allow them an adequate rate of return on their original investment of 100. B and C, C we would not regulate at all, and I'm not sure that we regulate B. B is a competitor, B is not a not a monopoly company, so we would not regulate either B or C. They would set their prices based upon what they think they need to do in order to, how much they need to recover and in order to try and get a foothold in the market. They may be able to, they may be able to go a period of time without any, making any money at all. Making any profit at all. Obviously not without any income or revenues at all, but without, they may be taking a loss in order to get a foothold in the market. Once we get to the point where either by service or just by the broader nature of the companies, where there is actual competition, effective competition, so that Company A can no longer exercise market power by virtue of a monopoly, then either the service or the company can be deregulated.
But it has to have sufficient, it has to have sufficient competition.
Yes.
Okay.
One of my reasons, Representative, for going through the history was to try and get to a point where I might be able to sort of summarize what we think the situation is with competition and efforts to get to that, because both the state of Oregon legislature and the Oregon Commission have been recognized nationally for being leaders in trying to lay the groundwork for increasing competition. The difficulties have been over the Telecommunications Act, over court cases that it takes to work that out, because there are only really two ways to provide competition. One is that companies like B and C build out their own network and provide facilities-based competition. Now, you have very little facilities-based competition for local exchange service right now. You have cellular competition, but it is supplemental to, not necessarily replacing, basic service. The other way, which the Telecommunications Act recognized, was that in order to do it, you need to be able to interconnect to the local exchange company. I, as a competitor, may need to buy parts of your, as if you are the local exchange company, I'm going to need to buy parts of your network in order to connect to the customer, because you've got the monopoly ubiquitous system. That's what the commission started in 1991. Prior, 5 years prior to the Telecommunications Act, was starting to break down that network in its individual elements so we could cost them and then price them so that competitors could access them. The Telecommunications Act actually set us back, and now we've had to go back through and make adjustments, and there are lots of things that are currently on appeal in the courts. But that's what would happen in this case. On an ongoing basis, you would have your original investment as 100. As that investment is depreciated, new investment would be made. New investment would go into the rate base. The total amount that would go into this rate base will change as some investments are depreciated and new investments are made, and a depreciation schedule is adopted for them. And then from time to time, based upon the earnings of the company, based upon changes in the capital market, we will adjust, and admittedly often contentious proceedings, we would adjust the rate of return to reflect that.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The concern that I had was that the formula which you provided that talks about return on investment, not return on equity, and I'll get back with you on that. But in the process of this, I appreciate now the regulation versus the non-regulation, and that, I guess, was really important to me, that because that's kind of a segue into the question I had relative to this.
information. This is, you indicated this is primarily for electrical, in part because of the industrial customers and, right. and commercial and residential. Mm-hmm. How much of your resources are allocated between the energy side of it and the telecommunications side? Can you maybe help us there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, first, I simply meant that this particular sheet that talked about rate spread referred to residential, commercial, and industrial, which applies mostly to electricity.
Right.
But this formula applies, is a basic regulatory formula that applies to both. And as I said, it's the basis, and then adjustments are made in each industry depending upon particular situations or particular incentives that are involved. But this formula basically applies as to...
That formula wouldn't work if you're using ROI. I thought we said we were very plainly going on return on equity, not return on investment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, now we use return on investment as the basic formula here because the revenue requirement not only includes return on equity, it includes debt capital as well. When we determine the return on investment, a portion of that is equity, and a portion of the investment is debt. So when we figure out the overall return, rate of return that goes into rates, for where we set the rate, because the rate has to cover the cost of debt as well as the cost of equity, for the purposes of setting the revenue requirement and the rate, it's return on investment. For purposes of determining whether or not the company is actually over-earning or under-earning, for purposes of answering the question yesterday of whether or not the utility actually had enough money to reinvest, we'd look at return on equity because that's where you get part of your capital to reinvest. So for purposes of rates, its return on investment includes debt and equity investment. For purposes of determining whether or not rates need adjustment because of over-earning, or to answer your question of whether or not the I'm not sure whose question it was, but it's kind of an implication anyway yesterday that because we had a pattern of reducing rates, that the utilities didn't have enough money to reinvest adequately in the infrastructure, we focused on return on equity.
Maybe you could share that formula with us, you know, as it relates to the return on equity versus the return on investment, which includes the debt capital portion and so forth. I hesitate to spend a great deal more time here relative to that, and that's what I say. That might be a natural segue for the Ways and Means and Appropriation Committee to be discussing issues of how much time is spent on the energy side versus the telecommunications side.
Do you have a breakdown on approximately how much time PUC spends on energy versus telecommunications?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, a couple of things. First, in our Representative Butler, we do specify both an authorized rate of return on investment and an authorized rate of return on equity.
Oh, that's a combination.
No, Representative, there is the return on investment includes return on equity as well as debt capital. I'll give you a sheet that shows what goes into the return on investment. I'll give you an example of a real life company as to where, and again, the return on investment will depend upon the percentage that is equity, on the percentage that is debt, on that percentage that's common stock. And the return on investment will vary depending upon what percentages are in each one of those. We also, for purposes of what we call an earnings review, we specify at the same time an authorized return on equity, which is used as one of the components in determining return on investment. But that's what enables us to determine this black line. It is actually based on decisions that it is specified in rate cases. As far as the question, Mr. Chairman, as to how much time is spent, it varies from year to year, and it's difficult for us to do a specific percentage breakdown. It will depend upon... Pardon? Yeah, maybe if staff, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, staff was suggesting that they might, while I'm talking, they might put an example up on the board.
Sure, that's fine. Yeah, oh, yeah, that would be fine. I just, as I said, I just had to pin that out, trying to figure out what, you know, what all of that meant.
Well, I'd be the chairman representing, but I'd be the first to admit that one of the two most difficult things about being a public utility commissioner are, one, mentioning that at a cocktail party, and two, trying to explain the intricacies of the formulas and some of the legalistic procedures that we operate under. I think this might help.
Could I ask you, Commissioner, if this is a process that's rate of return responsible, return on investment and all these schedules here that you've shown, are these something that you've reverted to, or is this something that you've been doing for a great many years and perhaps it's coming out to light more now, so because the public involvement wanting to know what is used in the determination of rates?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have been doing this for a long time. This formula has been embedded in regulation throughout the United States for decades. Actually, what's occurring recently is the beginning to diverge from this strict application of this formula. I mentioned in the history again in 1987, and then again in 1995, I believe, the Oregon legislature, with support of the commission, authorized the commission to do what is commonly called price cap, or alternative form of regulation. And what it really does is it kind of extends what you have under rate of return regulation, is that you've got this kind of continued earnings review, and then when you get either above or below a band of reasonableness that you've established in the rate case, one or the other, someone comes in and you adjust rates. That process creates various incentives and disincentives during that period of time. What price cap does is different in that it specifies, it says you won't have a rate case for a certain number of time. But it also says that the utility, that band of reasonableness, expands, and the utility gets to earn more money than it otherwise would, because otherwise we'd come in and adjust rates. But by price cap, you incent the company to be more efficient. And since rates aren't going to be adjusted, the more efficient they can be, the more cost-effective they can be, the more profit they can make, because we're not going to come in and change it. That was what we tried to do in the U.S. West proposal. Part of the problem, however, is under that same formula, you can also reduce costs by not maintaining your network or by reducing service quality. We built some standards in to assure that. In this particular case, U.S. West violated those standards, and we terminated the agreement. The laws are still on the books, however, and in electricity and in telecommunications, we have used alternative forms of regulation, and we have adopted various incentive mechanisms. If you read through the history of natural gas and electricity, you find that in both natural gas and electricity, we've adopted various specific incentive mechanisms under this basic formula. So, Mr. Chairman, to answer your question, it is an old process, but the Commission has altered that process in the last 10 years based upon state legislation and based upon really changes in the industry. Competition means that you do have to make some alterations in the normal process. And maybe it's a good time to kind of go through quickly the last few years of history, because they do encapsulate some of those changes.
Before you do that, Commissioner Representative Butler, did you have a question you wanted to ask on this?
Well,
a follow up.
Yes, I'm still, I guess, I guess the unregulated company, which would have large amounts of debt, would be free from any of that formula. The only formula that we're really using is either a new formula, your staff person is either a new formula. But I still would like to know, in relationship to, you know, everyone uses electrical equipment throughout the state. Most everyone has telecommunications throughout the state, and I would like to know how much of your time, energies, efforts, and so forth are devoted towards the telecommunication versus the energy side of it. That would be most helpful, including these rate cases. I guess maybe the easier question to answer would be, are we having the difficulties with the electrical case, the electrical and the energy companies, or energy in any form, electrical, natural gas, that we are expending resources on those as much as we are on the issues of the regulated statewide utilities relative to telecommunications?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, or Representative Butler, let me see if I can kind of address several of those. First, just let me talk in an industry, general industry point of view. It will vary in the industry from year to year depending upon changes in that industry. During the period in which the natural gas industry was being restructured, we spent a great deal of time on the natural gas industry. During the time up until about 1991, we spent time with periodic, every couple years, rate cases, perhaps in the telecommunications industry with GTE and US West. After 1991, when we did the A4, we didn't have that much work in telecommunications, except that in much of the work there was a lot of work, but it wasn't in the context of rate cases. It was in the context of the unbundling of the network, costing methodology, pricing, things that didn't involve rate cases. And then the passage of the Telecommunications Act in 1996 actually increased our workload.
In telecommunications, yes.
And then, of course, in the last 2 years, we've had to do not only, we've concentrated a great deal on U.S. web service quality and on carrying out the Telecommunications Act. And it did increase our workload because we have more players. We got arbitration that we have to do. A tremendous increase in workload. In electricity, in 1989, we started the least cost planning process, which helped us, reduce some of the contentious issues. But we did have the Trojan rate case in 1995, and then we've had the mergers, and we're in the midst of the electric restructuring issues, which do not necessarily at this point involve rate cases, but involve a great deal of work and exploration and laying groundwork on what are the implications of any of that restructuring. So it will vary, the workload will vary from year to year depending upon, it's not based solely on rate cases, and it will vary from year to year. As far as our organization and how much, about one third of our utility staff is in telecommunications. We have organized our staff, however, in a way that makes it sometimes difficult to decide exactly how much time is spent on one or the other, because we have a division. We have part of our staff that works on both financial analysis, rate of return components, those kinds of things. That staff works on both telecommunications and electricity and natural gas issues. We have staff that focuses on forward-looking policy analysis that's not so much focused always on rate case issues, but on things like electric restructuring currently, or might work on Bonneville Power Administration or implications of some of their decisions. That staff, policy support staff, and then on a forward-looking basis will shift from telecommunications to electricity depending upon the current issue. So,
Mr. Chair,
I can't really give you a breakdown percentage-wise.
Okay, let me ask this relative to that. That brings up there's how many electrical or energy providers are there, different energy providers are there in the state in relationship to telecommunication providers? Maybe that could give us some help.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, that depends on whether you talk about those that are regulated or those that are unregulated. The regulated, we regulate three major providers of electricity, PGE, Pacific Core, and Idaho Power. Idaho Power is a small percentage of Oregon, and only 5% of their territory is in Oregon, so we often defer to decisions made by the Idaho Public Utility Commission in relation to Idaho Power. There are a number of other electric companies that we do not regulate, publicly owned electric companies. I think the number is in the 30s, 32, maybe. Except for safety requirements and meeting the National Safety Code, we do not regulate those utilities. And yes, and we do have, and we do have authority over allocation of territory. But for regulation of rates and basically their offering of services, we do not regulate them.
So they very small amount of your time that they spent on the 32.
Yes.
And the majority of the. Let's see, of the staff time would be PGE, Pacific Corp, and Idaho Power, and Idaho Power would be very little. So, really, we're looking at PGE and Pacific Corp would take up the majority of your time relative to the electrical energy. And then we've got a couple of gas companies in the state.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, we have several gas companies in the state, the largest of which is Northwest Natural Gas, which takes up most of our attention as far as regulation goes. We have Cascade. We have what used to be Washington Water Power. Vista, yes. And that comprises the bulk of the energy regulation.
The telephone companies.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler. We have four major telephone companies which we regulate. They are CenturyTel, which used to be PTI, Sprint United, and GE and U.S. West. Most of our regulatory activity is related to U.S. West and GTE. We do, however, regulate the co-ops and the many, I think there's 31, again, about approximately 30 other telephone companies that we do not regulate, except that we regulate some joint and through services, such as extended area service.
And just one more follow-up. And in relationship to those four companies versus the small companies, and I assume that, I know I come from an area where there's a small company, I know they're regulated. I've met Phil Nygaard, I believe he's your telecommunications specialist for the whole state, as a matter of fact. But in relationship to those four companies versus the 25 or so small companies that there are across the state, tell me how much of your time is allocated to the four amongst the one-third of the staff.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, the bulk of the time is spent on those four companies. However, from time to time there are issues that arise depending on how you define them. If you define universal service and universal service policies, for example, as applying to everybody, which they do, then that takes up a great deal of time. Extended area service applications have increased a great deal. That takes up a great deal of time, and that does involve some of those other companies. So there are some issues that take up a great deal of our time that involve other companies but are not necessarily specific to an individual company's tariff or service, but are more often, except with EAS, very policy, either policy-oriented or framework-oriented, but they do involve all of the companies. So I'm not sure how I would allocate those in response to your question.
And so finally, let's just get down to the four companies, the CenturyTel, the Sprint, GTE, and US West. If they took up out of the one-third of the staff plus the shared staff throughout the building for rate regulation and bookkeeping and so forth, if the total amount spent on these four companies is 100x, how much is spent on CenturyTel, Sprint, GTE, and US West?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, I don't have those figures. We haven't broken it down that way. And as I explained, there are many issues that affect all companies that's difficult to go in and kind of allocate in the way in which you suggested. I will tell you the bulk of our time is spent on either U.S. West, GTE, or general telecommunications policy issues that affect all companies. Now, I need to add into that the increased workload that has come from arbitration cases in the Telecommunications Act, and that will depend upon individual applications and individual agreements. But again, the most contentious ones usually involve U.S. West and GTE.
Thank you, Representative Patridge.
I just wondered, just seeing off Representative Butler's question, are the 25 other companies regulated in the same way your kind of big four are?
Chairman, Representative Patridge, no, they are not. We do not regulate. We do not regulate their rates and services, except to the extent that they are what are called joint and true services. Extended area service is an example. And they are affected by our universal service policies
But aren't they competing with those big four in those same markets, a lot of these smaller companies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, by and large, no, they are not. They are individual, they are local exchange companies with allocated territory that they have, and by and large, they are monopolies within their own. I think we have one instance maybe, or maybe a couple instances where a local exchange company has gotten authority from us to compete in another local exchange company's territory, but we did a competitive survey and we found that currently only 3.5% of all the lines are served by someone other than the local exchange company, and only 0.6 of the residential lines are served by it. So no, those companies are not competing with the others.
But they're not regulated in the same way.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, no, they are not. Some of the companies are publicly owned or consumer owned, so they are not regulated in that way. Some of the companies that by statute are exempted, they're under 15,000 lines and they're exempted from regulation by state law. There's a provision where we could at some point step in, but we do not regulate them. The only four companies for whom we regulate the rates and the services are U.S. West, GTE, Sprint, and CenturyTel.
Do you compare how good those other 25 companies are doing, though, versus the regulations that you're putting on U.S. West, GTE, all those other companies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, we do not collect the same kind of, because we do not regulate them, we do not collect the same kind of data from them, nor do customers generally call in to complain to us because we do not regulate them. I can tell you from hearings we've held that those small companies generally do not have a large number of complaints, and their customers are generally pleased with them, in part because they're small, and in part because some of them receive some subsidies from things like the rural electrification, or it's changed now, that RUE. They are able to finance it was actually the smaller companies that switched to digital sooner than the larger companies because they didn't have so much to do, and because they got some, in many cases, assistance from other government funds. But we do not, by and large, get lots of complaints with them. We do not compare our rates with theirs because they have different cost structures and they have different support mechanisms. The only point where we get involved in that sort of comparison is where we get into universal service mechanisms that are designed to help support high-cost companies, and many of the smaller companies are, in fact, high-cost.
What about the rate of return requirement?
We have no rate of return requirement for them. We do not regulate them.
But if you looked at the, I mean, you just said that they switched to digital before some of the bigger companies did, and I'm just wondering, you know, if we're trying to really get investment in Oregon and telecommunications going in Oregon, they switched to digital before the big four companies are. I would think that you would kind of scratch your head and wonder, well, are they making more money on the investments that they've had, and do we need to look at that?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Cantridge. No, I don't wonder, because I think I pretty much know. We got a general idea. One is that they control their own destiny. They don't have to go to a corporate headquarters in Texas or Denver to get it money allocated throughout a large territory. They control their own destiny. They've got a small territory. They can do it. It's a lot easier to plan, and they're not competing. The other is that they get some assistance from federal subsidies, from high-cost funds, or from, in some cases, rural electrification or rural, I'm sorry, I can't remember what the current title of it is, but they get some of that. So that's the reason, not because they're making more money. It's because in many cases their cost of financing is actually less, and because they don't have to go through the same kinds of corporate squabbles and corporate decision-making that some of the larger companies that serve not only different areas within the state, but serve many states.
It just seems odd to me that if their rate of financing is less, if they're getting these subsidies, and they're switching over more quickly than some of the big utility companies, that maybe that's something that we need to look at to encourage what's going on. And I got some figures about what the return on investment pieces were industry-wide, what U.S. West is doing in other states versus Oregon. And what I had on the return on investment from what was regulated by the Oregon CDC was about 8.05% versus what U.S. West on a corporate wire looking at it, 9.6% return on investment, and then we're looking at the industry average, which is 12.18%. So, you know, that I'm trying to look at my concerns from yesterday about what return on investment is and how you get more people on board, you know, through various types of services or going out to third-party providers.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, it's difficult without seeing the figures and the basis of it to analyze the figures and compare them with ours and see what the difference is. I know if you go to financial markets, it's difficult because we're looking at the regulated portion within Oregon. U.S. West Communications is a large company composed of regulated and unregulated, of interstate and intrastate, and often the database is different. And I don't know whether the data you've got also assumes the rate case or assumes one side or the other wins in the rate case or not. I can tell you that the data I've given you here on the 22% is based upon U.S. West's own reported data.
Just for the record, I'm giving you FCC Aramis Report 4302, Schedules B1 and I1 is what we're looking at. That's what I was looking at for the 96, 97, and 98. Those are the FCC numbers that I'm looking at for the FCC.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, I think we can provide you with a description of what's different about that report and what we use for our basis. The point I wanted to make is that I do not believe the solution to increasing infrastructure in the state of Oregon is raising rates, and that the utilities have in fact been getting sufficient return on investment through the rate making process and sufficient return on equity to get a reasonable rate of return that allows them to make investments in the state of Oregon, and that the reason the switches were not changed in Medford, Representative Patridge, is not because U.S. West was not given the money to do it or because rates were too low. The reason, Representative Butler, that the investment between Pendleton and Baker City was not made is not because U.S. West was not given enough money or because rates were too low. U.S. West had the money to do it. They had planned it. They postponed it for 1 year, and now they've postponed it for another year. But it is not because they aren't receiving sufficient rate of return to make the investment.
Mr. Chair, I must caution our members. We've got a whole budget presentation to do here today. I know you want to get to the bottom of these numbers, and certainly I would encourage you to meet possibly with the commissioner, but we're getting sidetracked most in the budget into some mechanical things dealing with the PUC rather than the budgetary process. I'm not saying your questions are not valuable, they are, but for this committee to get back on schedule, I'd really ask us if we could refrain our questions to the budget process and not perhaps concepts that we might agree or disagree with. Representative Butler.
Thank you, and that's very well placed. I'm just wondering if in this regulatory process, if at some point all of the utilities, whether they were gas utilities or all of the electric utilities, were all regulated, or telephone companies were all regulated uniformly the same under the heightened level, or the, I guess I'm looking for the reduced level, and we talked about 142, Senate Bill 142, which could give, as I understand, some opt-out of rate of return regulation. Wouldn't that be a rather substantial savings to the PUC, and they wouldn't need the resources and the budget that they're looking at if we brought everything uniform and to a single standard as opposed to the multiple standards? And I'm still having some difficulty.
Staff respond to that,
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. The governor's budget and actually the LFO recommended budget does not assume passage of any bill, including Senate Bill 142, and so we wouldn't make any recommendations to the budget at this time for any possible savings to the commission.
Yeah, but what the passage has to make the board.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, if I could, in Senate Bill 142, and if it did pass in our workload, I'm not going to make a prediction on what effect it would have. But the bulk of our time spent with U.S. West right now is not on rate of return. We did in 96, we terminated their alternative form of regulation. Because of that, we had to do a rate case, and that went to 1990. That was decided in 1997, and it's currently on appeal. The bulk of the time we spend on U.S. West right now is on safety concerns and maintaining reliability and quality of the network. If Senate Bill 142 passed and we no longer regulated rates and services, I believe that effort and the amount of time we spent on that would still be continued. And in fact, I believe the expectation is, I mean, with a utility that now was freed of regulation the way U.S. West was, it would become even more important for us to maintain the level of effort on service quality and maintenance of the network. So it would have some reduction, but it would not affect the bulk of what we have done in the last 2 years in relation to U.S. West, which is concentrate on service quality and now the current investigations going on. Those, I think, would still be maintained.
And I hesitate to spend any further time, but just the service quality, that issue, which is where we're spending a huge amount of our time, general time, is a kind of a negative figure. I mean, we've gone through one set of lawsuits, lost and it's on appeal, and at what point in the budgetary
process? I'm not going to fully disclose it at this point, but there was good representative. Your staff is going to recommend substantially holding back on AG. I think to moderate the amount of litigation. So
thank you.
We'll
thank
get
you.
Into that tomorrow after we get the budget presentation.
And I apologize. I apologize that I just didn't understand the information that was handed out today, and then the issues dealing with Major 5 and some of those kinds of things. But perhaps we can have a work session, a sit-down session with Mr. Ekus' staff relative to some of the handouts that we've received. And so that I can, as an accountant, I still don't understand the concept of return on equity, but it's a concept which is out of my grasp because it's a regulatory concept as opposed to a pure accounting function. It bears some reality to a function of accounting, but more of a reality to something else, which is more esoteric than money. And looking at this, and I wanted to say it yesterday, and listening to the testimony, this company says it's just a wash in money for not having done the kinds of things that we were told that they would do, and it's the only utility stock, and I have some GTE in my own personal portfolio, and I still make money on it. But it's the only stock I took a loss on, utility stock I took a loss on last year, and if they're washing money, I can't see where it's at. So maybe that's a different issue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. From the way the formula looks, it looks pretty simple and straightforward. Revenue requirement equal to expenses plus rate base times rate of return. Now, do you have a pretty standard percentage you use for rate of return? So when people invest, they kind of have an idea what kind of rate of return they can expect from the utility industry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, we do not have a standard. The staff has a standard approach to a basic approach to figuring out, but each situation is different because each utility is different. Each utility's breakdown of debt, preferred, and common stock is different, and because a rate case may occur at different times, and the financial markets and inflation and other the general cost of capital for similar companies, it will change over time. 22% at one point in time may not be very high if you're running at if the interest rates are 14% or something. If interest rates are down low and someone's earning 22%, the relation is different. So you will see different utilities operating under different rates of return because different authorized return on equity because of the time in which the time which the return on equity and return on investment was adjusted, and because they have different ratios of debt to equity. And these issues are, in fact, some of the most contentious issues in a rate case. You will frequently have in a rate case parties stipulating to a number of factors, including maybe even the overall, issues of overall expenses. But it is very infrequent that you have parties stipulating to the rate of return and cost of capital issues. So they are very contentious issues, but they are not the same for every company.
Yes.
I understand it depends on the interest rate, the market interest rate, because we have a low interest market today. So what is your range in today's interest market, can you give us a range? What is it for the utility industry?
I can't tell you what it is, Mr. Chairman, Representative Yee. I can't tell you what it is now, but I'm trying to think of the last in the Pacific Core. What's the most recent one? 10 is the midpoint. Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, staff informed me that I think in our last electric rate case anyway, we used about a 10% return on equity, which is a midpoint of a reasonable range. Reasonable range might be anywhere, using the 10 point probably say from 13 down to 7. Anywhere in there would be considered a reasonable range. We wouldn't, and by that I mean if it went below 7, the utility would probably come in and ask for a rate increase. If it went above 13 and stayed there for any period of time, we might come in, staff might initiate, or some other party might ask for a rate decrease. Not all of our decisions are made in contentious rate cases either. We do make adjustments on a regular basis through either agreements or other process.
I might interrupt the committee again to say, if you want to get privately with the commissioner, I would certainly encourage you to do so. We're getting off track to a bunch of mechanical things here, and all we need to do is get back on track with the budget. That's our role and obligation. The staff is trying to get it focused back on the budget so we can do our work best in the month. Senator Duke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been an interesting discussion today, and I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I don't have an investment portfolio. Most of my constituents don't have an investment portfolio, but they have light switches and they have telephones and they use them. And unfortunately for me, they call periodically, more often than I wish that they did, to complain about those things. In my district, the Public Utility Commission is one of the most popular agencies or groups that we have in the state. And they shouldn't have to know much about what the PUC does, but they do. A good chunk of that is because I represent a lot of area with U.S. West in it. But there are other pieces. I have the Miss Gas Fields, and that caused a little flurry recently. They have been there religiously to defend the rights of the people in terms of following up on promises when times were bad with U.S. West, and we all understood they were. They made commitments, we'll provide you a cell phone, we can't get you a phone within 30 days, those kinds of things. Well, who was it who was supposed to make sure that those things happened? It turned out to be the Public Utility Commission. It sure wasn't me. We managed to handle one through going through the lobbyists. But we don't have any regulatory authority, so we can't make those things happen. The governor appoints, the Senate confirms, and I'm going to be anxious to see what we're doing with the Attorney General's fees and those kinds of things. But for myself, I will resist any attempt to do through the budget what members have been unable to do, either through the governor's office or the Senate confirmation process. Those aren't budgetary things. Those are philosophical things that need to be dealt with, but they need to be dealt with in another realm. I want to be able to go home and tell my folks that when it takes over a month to get a telephone hooked up, that there's someplace they can go to try to make that happen, that when somebody is trying to run a gas line through their fields, then they don't want it, that there's someplace that they can go to try to deal with those things. And I want to make sure that there's somebody out there to fight if they believe that the rates are fair or aren't fair, and that we're on an equal footing with companies who have millions and millions of dollars to spend to get to where they believe they need to be. I'm not saying anybody's right or wrong. I want to make sure that the state of Oregon is on an even playing field with them. That's my piece.
And I appreciate your comments. The only thing I would add on to your comment is that I understood the Citizens Utility Board to be the advocator. This is the regulator. And I don't want the regulator becoming the advocate. There's a difference between the two.
All right, let's try to get back on the budget if we can.
Chairman, at this point, I think where we left off was the history of 1995 on that, and you want to get to the budget.
I'd like to get to the budget.
Where you want to start at this point. Chairman, in light of your comment about what our role is and what the Citizens Utility Board role is, I would like to pass out our statute that talks about our statutory role. I don't know when to distinguish between advocate or regulator, but our statute does say that we shall represent the customers of any public utility or telecommunications utility and the public generally in controversies respecting rates, valuation, service, and all matters of which the Commission has jurisdiction, and then that we may participate in any proceeding before any public officer, commission, or body of the United States or any state for the purpose of representing the public generally and the customers of the services of any public utility or telecommunications utility operating or providing service. So there are times when I feel it's necessary for us to be an advocate. When I know we are being an advocate as a representative of the ratepayers, for example, with the Bonneville Power Administration, and as somebody we do not regulate, but their decisions affect ratepayers greatly. So in that sense, we do participate and do work as an advocate. I look at this in terms of what the statute says as represent and not as as creating a difference between advocating and regulating. But I just wanted to point out that we do have a responsibility to represent customers in certain times, and we have exercised that. BPA, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FCC proceedings are examples where we have participated as representing on behalf of the ratepayers. And sometimes it's difficult to represent somebody without advocating. Mr. Chairman, we started the history after I went through the agency mission, so I believe we're on the organization. And I'll go through this quickly because I think we've in some ways covered a lot of the general things. We were a three-person commission created by the public, I think, in a ballot measure in 1986. As far as our infrastructure goes, we are not a general fund agency, and nor do we receive any lottery funds. We're funded by a gross revenue fee that's assessed on natural gas, telecommunications, and water utilities. Because of electric restructuring, the legislature changed the basis for the fee for utilities. Electric utilities, it's on a kilowatt-hour fee, and we're also funded by a surcharge for the Residential Service Protection Fund on telephone lines. We are proposing 118 positions for the 1999-2000 biennium. It includes budget packages for 9 additional positions to address workload issues in consumer services, safety and engineering, and hearings. As was explained earlier, some of those positions are actually currently filled by temporary, and they're simply making them permanent. Our decisions affect virtually every Oregonian and can have an impact on the economy and the environment as a whole. We're asked to talk a little bit about our business environment, and Mr. Chairman, if you wish me to go through these much more quickly than I am, please let me know.
I'd like to have you move fairly rapidly because the Senate meeting is 10 a.m. this morning, and I'd like to give the members a few moments to go to their offices if necessary.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we'll just skip to the next one then, which is the agency revenue. The information here describes the only thing I'd want to point out is that in consumer services, we get an average of 1,400 new customer inquiries monthly, and received a total of 17,000 last year. We have 227 open cases and administrative hearings. And in the Residential Service Protection Fund, we provided 31,000 Oregonians with some monthly assistance, and we relayed an average of 76,000 calls a month. And I think we have one of the lowest cost per minute for relay services in the state at 84 cents. Our revenues come from... I believe this is on budget page 45 in your document. Our revenues come primarily from our utility fees. Actually, I think the figure is the actual figure. Our most recent information indicates that it's actually, instead of the 20 this year, we'll actually collect $17.4 million. The Residential Service Protection Fund surcharge generates $10 million. And then we do have some federal funds for pipeline safety and workers' compensation. But the bulk of our money is from the utility fees, finance utility program, and the RFCF surcharge, which finances that program.
Is your utility fee that you charge utilities, is that a flat assessment that grows by the proportion of the income that the utility generates?
Mr. Chairman, it is a flat fee that we determine annually, and it is based on it is a per dollar of utility revenue, except for an electricity where it's by a kilowatt hour. But the fee is set as a flat rate per dollar of revenue. It's 0.0025 per dollar of revenue. Statute limits it to 0.0025.
So regardless of how much the income is for utility, the percentage factor always remains constant.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no, we will change it annually depending upon the estimate of the depending upon the gross revenues of the utilities, and our expectations of within the context of the budget that we're given.
How often is that calculation changed?
Once a year. Well, it's made once a year. We collect annually. I think we have a chart that sort of shows the cash flow process.
Representative Schrader?
Kind of another spin on that. You've indicated that complaints are going up, and certainly with the deregulation throughout the utility industry, even if it's not complaints, you're going to have a lot of inquiries, I'm sure, about what's going on. Do you have a method, or within this framework, are you allowed to increase or decrease the revenues from that you receive from the utilities to deal with these inquiries?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schrader, the costs of our utility consumer services program are built into our budget, and it's paid for by all the utilities that contribute to the budget based on a formula. What we will do is each year we collect once a year. Once a year we will approve the amount within the limitations of the law that we will
apply to the utilities. And so what we end up with is kind of a situation where the ending balance can be fairly high, then we spend it down, and then I think it's in March or April, February, I think, we set the fee, we collect from the utilities, then our balance goes up, spend it down, goes up, but we set it once a year, we collect once a year from the utilities.
What is in the start?
April 1st.
Thank you. Question on the telephone access lines for charge, is that a set amount, or does that change as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, that changes as well. Again, there is a limitation. That varies according to the amount that's in the fund and what we believe is necessary to carry out the service level. It has fluctuated. It began at 25 cents. It went down from there. When we got the new relay, contract and when the legislature actually required us to only maintain we couldn't maintain more than a 6 month balance. We had more than a 6 month balance. We're spending that down and the surcharge went down to 10 cents. We expect that it's going to go back up to, maybe 17 cents in the future. The legislature has a 25 cent cap on it. I'm sorry, started out as 25. Staff reminds me that it actually was raised to 35, but it's ranged recently between 10 and 16 cents.
So that explains the variations in the amount that we see on page 46. So you go from 11 million or 12 million to 9 million to 6 million, and you want it just for 10.5, so that's 6.5.
I was trying to figure out how you generate such a fluctuation. Yeah.
That's really the top of 5 cents in the cat, is what that is. I'm sure that that's kind of mixed up with kind of, yeah.
Thank you, Bart.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Starr, in case of the RFPF program, yeah, it was suspending. The legislature told us, legislature put a cap on how much we could keep in the ending balance, and so we send it down. We only maintain a 6 month ending balance sufficient to go 6 months.
Okay.
Mr.
Chairman, I've been watching the telephone access since the game, even though your surcharge dropped, but your base has increased. You have included the cell phone users. So when it drops, it doesn't mean your expenses have gone down. It's because your expenses have keep going up, although you have included a larger base. My question is, do you have any kind of cost control measures for this program, so we don't lose the
surcharge
going up and up all the time?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, I need to ask whether, since the bulk of the costs are related to the relay program, as opposed to the low-income assistance or the distribution of the devices to the hearing and speech impaired, whether are you addressing specifically the relay program?
Well, to this program, Mr. Chairman, in general. For example, I remember last session I asked you whether the equipment was given to the user or the sell through number on the basis of income criteria. Because they are hearing impaired, doesn't mean they don't have the ability to purchase the equipment. So do you give it to them outright, or do you sell it to them according to income basis?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, we loan them the devices. We have no statutory authority to provide an income test to the recipients. In most cases, if someone, the devices which we provide are somewhat limited in their capabilities, and So I think that, that in a lot of cases, the people who have sufficient income to buy their own may actually do so because they can get more sophisticated equipment. But we have instituted some things to reduce the cost and to make sure that the program isn't that we aren't exposed to risks by just giving the equipment away, but we do not have any statutory authority to apply an income test. The bulk of the recipients are people who are at or about 135% of poverty level, but we don't have a statutory authority to do so. We did go through some financial analysis of it, of what if we did, how much would it save. It was negligible. It was maybe $80,000 out of a $10 million budget. The bulk of the expenses come from the relay program. And again, there, our method of controlling costs with the relay program is through the negotiation of the contract, because federal statute requires us to make it available. And the more the program is used, the more it's going to cost. Our concern has been trying to maintain the cost per call as low as possible, and in fact, we have done that. We are among the lowest in the nation. There are some things, I think, if you'd like, given the time, staff can sit with you and explain the things that we have instituted to help some cost controls, but as far as the income test goes, we do not have statutory authority to do that.
Mr. Chairman, during our discussion in that session, we talked about the low-income criteria, and you can use the ones who are eligible for food stamps can be eligible for the use of the equipment, but the ones who are above that level should be able to pay for their own equipment. I would be very interested in knowing the cost of this program for the past years. When did you start this program?
This program was begun in 1988 after being created by the legislature in 1987. The Americans with Disabilities Act passed in the early 1990s, I can't remember which session of Congress it was, which required basically these same programs, but also put some some additional requirements on our program. So we are now operating the program not only pursuant to Oregon law, but pursuant to federal law.
I would be interested in knowing the cost of this program since 1988, so I have an idea how much it has gone up. But it has always gone up a lot.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, it has gone up a lot primarily because of the relay program. The more the relay program has been offered, the more, and particularly with the requirements of the Americans with Disabilities Act, not only are there more people, not only are more calls being made by people, but there are more businesses and more entities out there providing services at the other end for doing it. That the program has grown because the people that for whom this service is available are utilizing it more, and that the bulk of the costs come from the relay program.
But I'm always informed that Oregon is doing a lot more than what federal government requires us to do. So if you can provide me the information on past history of the cost of this program.
We can do that, Chair.
I'd like to look at it further in this graph.
Senator Gooch, did you have a question? Okay. We have approximately 5 minutes. Commissioner, if you can kind of hone in on some more budget items here. What we're going to do is extend this committee hearing tomorrow. We're supposed to go to work session on the PUC, but I feel that there are certainly sufficient questions arisen
that we need to be judicious and look at the budget aspect. And for that reason, I would recommend that we probably not have a work session tomorrow, but I want you to, as members, if you have mechanical problems with the PEC and wanting to know or identify areas of concern, that if you would get a hold of Mr. Willis, the administrator or commissioner, you try to work out your differences as far as the basis of understanding. But we will confine our comments tomorrow to the budget until we can get through this budget presentation so we can go to a reasonable work session on it. So, Mr. Eakins, Commissioner Eakins, you have about 5 minutes and then we have to adjourn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, maybe it'd be best just to stop a bit, not just to go, maybe we'll go to the governor's recommended budget. This is basically the budget. What we wanted to show here, we have a specific breakdown by expense and package later on, but the budget is really a recap of, I think, what the fiscal officer described later, but we had a legislatively approved budget with e-board actions of $27.8 million. Our current service level is $27.8 million, and then our current service level is $28.9 million. Governor's recommended budget is $30 million. We have a program breakdown there, but these are the breakdowns and the reasons, I think, are what we'll end up talking about tomorrow. Maybe we can just go to the close here with the expenditure fund breakdown.
What is the RSPF program?
It's the Residential Service Protection Fund program. It's assistance to low-income customers and provides the devices and the telecommunications relay service for the hearing impaired, that's, all of which is required not only by federal law but state law.
So I see that that's continuing to increase from the last item, but if you use current service level and the governor's revised figure remains the same, is that the 25-cent tax that's charged on telecommunications?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Only it's currently 10 cents.
Oh, 10 cents. Is that fluctuated too?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it has fluctuated from time to time. And
25 cents is the max.
25 cents is the max. Currently, the maximum, excuse me, is 35 cents. It started out as 25 cents. It was reduced after that. It's currently at 10 because the legislature established the 6-month requirement that our ending balance could be no more than what was necessary to continue operating for 6 months. So we've been spending the ending. We've kept it at 10 and spending the ending balance down until we get to that month. And with the increased usage and new relay contract, we expect it will have to go up to 17 cents once we've spent down to that ending balance. But currently it's at 10 cents.
Okay. Is that a good place to possibly stop for the day?
That would be fine. We might just cover the expenditures, which are pretty simple since
Okay. Basically...
other funds and federal funds, and that's basically the breakdown. So this is probably a good place to stop.
And these federal funds are safety funds on gas lines?
Yes, primarily.
Okay. Are there further questions or discussion? If not, we are adjourned until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.